We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendricks?
Yeah, if I'd known that, I didn't know that. I had to check the rule. That was why the guys on the bench came out and questioned me about, you know, that Liam was going to be the runner. And I said, yeah, I know. So we didn't know it. I'll reread that situation. I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know.
You need to have somebody on your staff that knows the new rules inside and out. There is no excuse. So we have talked about how the Sox didn't have any runs and they only had a couple hits. That is under the category of excusable. It happens in baseball. But what Tony La Russa was unable to do in knowing the rule and admitting it, that's more inexcusable. And I think that's what triggers people like Sox fans. You heard the passion in Josh Nelson's voice. Mully, you've heard it in you all morning. It definitely yesterday feels like a tipping point, perhaps, when it comes to Tony La Russa.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we haven't hit it already, to be honest with you, David. I just think that the problem is it's not getting better.
It's unfair to all of us. It's unfair to the fans. It's unfair to the team. It's unfair to Tony, what's going on here.
There's a real struggle happening. And, you know, as we mentioned, you're talking about this idea that you've got a manager that is kind of figuring out the rules as he's going along. You got a manager that is getting used to the game as he goes along. You've got a Hall of Fame manager that has been out of the dugout for 11 years, and it's quite frankly showing some rust. And I think that the idea that it's just going to improve is one that I think people have a hard time accepting, because it's 29 games into a season of 162.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Mully at Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel, kind enough to do double duty for us, to get up early after working yesterday into the early evening. And Matt, God bless you. What a trooper. How was it difficult?
It was hilarious because my wife and I went to bed, set the alarm. Yeah. She's like, I'll wake up with you. I'll have some coffee. It'll be great. Oh, okay. Yeah. Lovely. And then the alarms go off and she's like, what's happening? It's the middle of the night. What is this? Just completely and utterly confused by us being awake. But easy, man. Thanks for the invite. I love being here with you. This is fun.
Yeah, it's great. I am really looking forward to talking over some of the baseball things from both sides of town. You know, there's good stuff going on the north side. There's interesting things going on the south side. There's adversity on both sides of town.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to pick it apart and talk about it. And of course, the White Sox were off Thursday. They're now in second place by a half game behind the Indians, of all teams, and a half game ahead of the Royals, who they play in Kansas City tonight. The beginning of three, Carlos Rodon, 4-0 with the .72 ERA. He's on the bump.
He's awfully good. That's a tough one to have to lie around in for a couple of days, isn't it?
That's awful.
That's a day game.
It's awful.
It's a day game a couple of days ago, so you got that whole day, that night. I thought Tony was kind of saved by John Means throwing the no-hitter, so the baseball news cycle in terms of the national perspective, gave him a little bit of a break. But for the team and for the coaches to sit around and stew on that one is not so fun.
Both of my brothers, I have two older brothers, and they both are living in Europe at this point. And I, you know, they're Sox fans and they're Chicago sports fans, and I will get messages for them. So, excuse me, during the game, I'll have messages from friends, and we'll go back and forth, and we'll do our little show routine and comment on things. So the White Sox play in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. I think that game ended at like 9 o'clock at night in Europe, whatever. And my brothers hadn't gotten to all the fallout until the next morning. So it's like I'm dealing with my friends. We're going back and forth. We come in, we talk about it. Yeah. And then I get in the car and I'm on the phone to Europe trying to figure out what the hell happened and talking people off the ledge. It was really funny to have so much conversation about it in real time, even though it was, you know, the next day. But it was real time to them.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were on the air when it was going down, and I was out there trying to figure out exactly what was happening and got clued to the particulars of the rule by Mike Farron, who does the Diamondbacks pre and post, and had tweeted, "Wait a minute, I think you can just use the guy before the pitcher." And then I did a Google search. This is what I did, which I think anybody could have done. MLB ghost runner rule.
Wow.
And the second thing up was the exact details of the whole thing. So I wasn't familiar with every nuance of it.
Of course.
But I'm not a manager with a day off in Cincinnati before my first interleague series.
And the calls we got defending Tony included, well, you know, it's a National League rule. How's he supposed to know it? They play National League teams. Yeah. You're in a National League ballpark.
Yeah.
And again, if he doesn't know it, somebody better own it. Somebody better have it, and somebody better come to him and tell him about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we talked about Ernie Adams, who is, of course, the kind of Belichick whisperer. He just retired.
Oh, yeah.
And he's the guy that has basically memorized the rule book. He's the guy that does all this weird research and stuff, and no one knows exactly what he does, but he's Bill's buddy. They were old high school chums, and there's a special phone on the sideline, which is just to him, and Belichick will run over and talk to him about various things. That's the kind of thing you need. You got to have somebody that can get to the manager, and you got to have a manager that will listen to
him. There you go. See, it ends up being about the personal dynamics, doesn't it? That's the stuff that fascinates me, and I think a lot of us have been trying to dig into over the past day and a half is figure out what is the makeup of the coaching staff? Who's whose guy? Who talks to him? Who does he listen to? And all that kind of thing. They need a game. They need a game. I think Sox fans need a game to actually watch and focus on instead.
Yeah, and they need to score some runs and to stay out of those situations, apparently. The Cubs host the Pirates this afternoon. I love a Friday day game. It's just magic. Zach Davies on the bump, and the Cubs, obviously, with the three-game sweep over the Dodgers, you could talk about, oh, the Dodgers are struggling. That was a great moment in the season for the Cubs. And listening to Anthony Rizzo talk about the roller coaster just reminds you that if you're a good team, you have consistency. If you are not good, you get on the roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
So right now, we're kind of on the chink, chink, chink on the way up. And let's hope there isn't, like, hands in the air screaming when the Pirates are in town, because the Pirates are a bad opponent. They have been thus far this year.
I love that you're getting specific about the roller coaster, because I've been using the analogy for a long time that the whole season is a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And then I start to talk about it and I get caught up trying to figure out, well, what's the good part? Like, is the good part when you're climbing, or is the good part when you're flying down and you're terrified? No, I think the good part is after you fly down and you're starting to level off a little bit and you're like, I survived. This is great. Is that the good moment?
I am not a roller coaster guy. I just don't love them. It's mainly about being crammed into a seat that was built for a guy half my size. But
I know.
But I've had plenty of experience on roller coasters.
I don't think I fit in them for like 20 years of my life.
It's just like, you know, it's like me and one of my kids crammed into it, you know. They have plenty of room, but I'm taking up half the bloody carriage. I don't like spinning around, but I don't mind the ups and downs.
Yeah.
I can handle the ups and downs, but it's the spinning. If you ever get in one of those spinning things.
Yeah, one of the corkscrew ones.
I hate that.
Oh, where you go straight and it's like,
yeah, it's too much.
Oh, yeah.
I need like the build up, and then, as you say, whoa, they're coming down. And then you're like, oh, wow, there we go. Oh, here comes the buildup. And then we go down again.
Right.
I love a good splash mountain. Don't get me wrong. I don't mind water. But
those were fun log flumes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I don't like any ride that just spins. And I think that's what you're trying to keep from happening in this season. You don't want to be spinning kind of out of control or feeling that spinning. And as long as that happens, then, you know, you're going to be all right. Mm. And there's no danger of illness. The worst thing ever in an amusement park is when someone loses it.
Oh, God.
And I don't mean gets angry. I mean loses their lunch.
Yes.
And that nearly happened to me. I nearly lost my lunch watching that 10th inning because it wasn't just one decision. It was three decisions. The you know, obviously not knowing the rule was a huge one. And you have your $54 million closer on third base and you can't have a play at the plate. Mm. But sending Leury, we talked about what was the worst part of the inning.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was sending Leury. I think, Dustin, you said that it was I think David talked about the rule. I talked about somehow getting an out at second. And Dustin said Billy Hamilton with the bat in his hand was the real problem.
There's so many.
And that's...
That's scary.
That's a holy trinity of issues there. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and how about the choosing the double switch to put him in that spot?
Yeah.
As if you don't know that he's going to have to run. And I'm convinced that he didn't know. And he was told by the coaches and he tried to rescind the double switch, which is why Liam Hendricks runs that figure eight out there in right field.
He ran the route tree.
And I heard you guys yesterday morning, understandably, talking about did the coaches talk to him? They talked to him right there. They were trying to get him not to do that particular double switch and get himself into the trouble in the first place.
Right.
And that didn't work. But then he still had the chance to get over it and get through it. But then, to your point, sending Leury,
oh my God,
that's all designed to make the catcher hold on to the ball because he's afraid that the guy on third is going to run.
And the guy on third is not going to run.
And everybody knows that.
And Matt, maybe it's designed to avoid the double play, but Billy Hamilton, if he's getting on base,
no need.
There's not going to be a double play.
Correct.
So what the hell are you thinking? That to me, the priority is get the run in. And Dustin's right. You know, if you had Abreu on third. So Abreu's not exactly a speedster.
But he's a legit base runner.
But you could put Danny Mendick in for him. And you could bring in Zach Collins and have him hit a fly ball to score the run. He's a legit base runner.
Yeah.
And then if you had to, you throw him in right field and have Collins play first to get after you score to try to get out of the next inning. But you can't come away from that opportunity in a game where you can't score without a run. You got to create a run. You can't be worried about getting two.
Yeah.
And you can't have the game fall to Billy Hamilton striking out, which is what you did by sending Leury, who, help me out. Leury has what? Like he's got 50 something steals and God knows how many appearances in his career. It's not like, I mean,
he's not
does
blinding
it scream
speed.
To you, oh, Leary's on first, look out. Here we go.
It's so many things that were wrong with it and kind of scary.
Oh,
and then later that night in the Cubs Cubs-Dodgers game, yes. Dave Roberts used the rule correctly.
Right, right.
Put out the guy before, still anxious
to get fired, Dave Roberts. At least it appears that way, doesn't it?
You think so?
Well, I think he's trying hard. It did in that series. No? Am I wrong? I just thought he was terrible in that series, frankly. The Cubs were very good, though, and that's great. And just do it against the Pirates. How about the Angels? They cut Albert Pujols. And so immediately there's texts about he's coming to Chicago. They lost a lot of bats. And then Bob Nightingale writes a quick story explaining that the White Sox aren't interested. Apparently the brass aren't interested. And I just laughed at it because it was so great to have that come out before Tony could go, never mind.
to have it come out from above. Well, good, because it's a terrible fit. It's a terrible roster fit.
God.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
No. DH and first base only, and you got enough of those guys.
Yeah. It's like bringing a lamb to slaughter, so to speak. The Bears' Matt Nagy was on Colin Cowherd's show on FS1, and it was interesting to hear what he had to say. He talked about the quarterback. That's all he talked about. There was nothing else. Those were all the questions, and those are the questions, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to hear him talk about how their plan is in place and what they're trying to get done, and the idea that that the quarterback will determine the timetable and not the other way around.
I'm looking forward to talking with you and picking your football brain. I have so much respect for it, Mully. Yesterday, Danny and I had the chance to talk to Scott Goldman, who's the guy who designed and executes the aptitude tests that all the NFL draftees take.
Yeah.
And this puzzle that we've watched for decades where GMs try to figure out who's going to be a good quarterback or not, I was fascinated by the aptitude conversation about the difference between intelligence and knowledge. Knowledge is the stuff you know. Intelligence is how you go about acquiring it.
Yeah.
And what processes you use. And it feels like that's the most important thing about quarterbacks. And we don't really have a finger on it, on how to quantify it and choose whether a guy's got it or not. So
it's extraordinary that the NFL still is half right on first round picks. It's extraordinary that position in particular has flummoxed everyone, especially with the first five picks in a draft. If you go back and look at it, is it the first 10? So I think that there's a lot of elements of that we probably should pick apart a little bit. It's amazing to me that the Bears haven't even stumbled upon a quarterback in all this time.
It feels impossible.
Yeah.
I think they may have. Every conversation I end up in about Justin Fields, I feel better about him by the end of it, pretty much.
I've told the story on the air, Matt. My dad went to a Notre Dame game against Ohio State and brought back an Ohio State pennant because the Notre Dame ones were sold out. And we, as kids, we played football at St. Thomas More on the South Side. We had the same uniforms as Ohio State, same colors. Mm. And we became Ohio State fans. And I've followed Ohio State football like since my childhood. And I've seen all these guys come and go, and I've seen them fail even when I thought they were going to have success. But I really think highly of this kid. And when they got him, it was like the first time where you say the Bears traded up and they got a guy that was underdrafted. He should have been drafted higher.
Yeah.
When you think about his career and the things that he's capable of doing and his intelligence, all of those factors combined. I mean, what an unbelievable athlete, what a good kid and a bright person. And it's just remarkable that he's not drafted higher than 11.
Well,
it's crazy.
Hopefully we look back on it and thank the gods that he fell. Feels like that might be the case.
I've been wrong plenty of times on quarterbacks. So I make no effort to hide that. My liking him shouldn't matter in any fashion because I've been so wrong about the Matt Flynn's of the world. And what was his name? Cardale Jones. Liked him.
Oh, yeah.
There were different guys I liked at different points, and I apologize. All right, we got to get to the 5 at 5. We'll bring in our executive producer, Dustin Rhodes. Matt Spiegel in today. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
With April Cy Young winner Carlos Rodon on the bump tonight at Kansas City, is it another reminder that a great man in this very room has proposed trading him now when his value is at arguably the highest of his career? Genius idea or foolish to break up the biggest strength of this team?
You know, I think it's a little bit of a dilemma. First of all, I'm not a great man. Let's get that straight. I am in this room, but it should be said, I'm not a great man. I don't agree with that.
I'm sorry.
No, you obviously are the great man here, and you are the one with the genius idea. I got to tell you, when I heard it, I thought it was kind of like, what? That's insane. And then I started thinking about how I feel about Carlos Rodon. I think it's really interesting because there is this idea in the back of my mind that's very difficult to escape, which is that, you know, Cinderella is going to turn into a pumpkin herself come midnight. It's just this weird idea that I have watched Carlos Rodon's career and I've seen so many injuries and I have seen so many times when I thought he was on his way to something and it wasn't there, that I, like coming into the season, I was kind of, well, you get 50 innings out of Carlos. I hope Ronaldo wins the starting job so Carlos can be used. I never saw this coming, and he's been phenomenal. And I guess the point then would be he's at the absolute kind of apex of his value career-wise, so why not get what you can out of him? And you have so many needs now that you have no outfield. I think it's a genius idea. I also think it's foolish to break up your biggest strength. So I'm worried. Their starting pitching is so good, and the bullpen is supposed to be the best in baseball. We haven't seen it yet. But if that ever happens, they're going to win a lot of games with small ball, if you will. If one of these guys can catch fire, if Abreu can catch up to some fastballs and start putting the ball out of play, and I mean in the stands, all of a sudden you're going to win some of these games. So I think it's a real ask to break up the pitching staff, but I'm fascinated to get your opinion because it's a great idea.
Yeah, you know, I really think that Carlos Rodon's changes and his ascent is for real. It's based on a lot of legitimate stuff and a lot of hard work, and I have a ton of respect.
Yep.
But for me, it comes back to the fact that he's on a $3 million contract and he's a free agent at the end of the year, and he's this good. That is appetizing. That is serious value out there on the trade market. And that's more value if you are going to do something. And that's the big if they even are going to try and do something.
Right.
I think it appears more likely that they're not, that they're going to use the Brian Goodwins of the world who made the team in Charlotte now and is down there, and Nick Williams if he has to come back up and piece it together and just kind of and wait for Adam Engel and that kind of thing. But if you were going to deal... You don't want to deal Cease, who is looking great, and you've got for 5 years.
You're not dealing him.
No, and then you're not going to get anything of consequence for Jimmy Lambert or Jonathan Stever or Ronaldo Lopez. But you could have somebody from that triumvirate fill in as your fifth starter, and one of those guys figure out which one it is. So, yeah, I think Rodon's got the value, and he still might decide to come back here. You know,
yeah, he likes it here.
Yeah, he likes it here. Clearly, he came back once. You can do a thing like the Yankees did with Chapman, where you trade Rodon and he decides to come back next year. So I think it's the one to consider if you're going to think about dealing a pitcher. You don't want to deal Kopech. Of all of them, he's the one to consider and would get you a lot in the outfield if you want to go that route.
I guess the question is, and I love all these ideas. I'm always throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what will stick. But what does Carlos, like, from the center field vineyard of available guys that could be on their last legs in their prospective town, like, is there, I don't know enough about it. Like, is there a one-for-one out there? Like, as an example, Charlie Blackman, okay? Mm-hmm. Charlie Blackman! Like, is Carlos Rodon somebody that the Rockies would be interested in, and would that make any kind
of sense? I think you could get
sense?
Less than that. I mean, I don't think you'd have to give up that much for him because of the contract.
Yeah, and it's tricky because the Rockies, because he's on a 1 year, so you'd have to find a team that's actually trying to win too.
Right, also, you know? As well, and probably in the other league as well, right? You're probably, if you're the Sox, you want to put him in the National League. You probably don't want to keep him in the American League. Listen, I love the idea. I think it's a great thing to talk about. I've always been a firm believer that Kopech at some point this year is going to be in the regular rotation, so you could afford to lose him. But I don't think you break it up. Like, to Mully's point, they're really good. And having Kopech and Crochet, assuming they can both be healthy, and then you hand it over to Liam Hendricks, that's really good. That's the old
Royals-esque. Aaron Bummer's good, Dustin.
Yeah, he's pretty good too. But I mean, Kopech and Crochet are kind of, I guess I'd call them elite. They're kind of bone-in, dry age ribeye to me. where, you know, I'm good with a skirt steak too. Bummer's more like a skirt steak to me.
Let me just say real quick, the Reds, that's the team. The Reds have Tyler Naquin and Nick Senzel, who can play center. They've got Aristides Aquino coming off the injured list. They're going to have Shogo Akiyama coming off the injured list, and they're going for it. So I think the Reds might be your outfield surplus match if you went that way.
I'm struggling how to answer that one.
How conceivable is it that the White Sox win their series in Kansas City and sit in first place come Monday? Will it be a quiet weekend for manager Tony La Russa, or will he be in the center of some horrible decision that blows up any remaining confidence in his decision-making?
God, I hope not. I really hope not. I do not take joy in going after a guy like this who's brilliant, has had a brilliant career, and you know, has carved out an incredible legacy. But that legacy is getting soiled as this year goes on, and you've seen this volume of mistakes and awkwardness through, what, 29 games, as I heard you say?
29 games.
In the open, Mully. It's just not right for kind of anybody involved except Tony and I guess Jerry. And thus endeth the list. So I hope there is nothing that we're talking about. And this team is good enough, the roster is good enough, that sure, they ought to be in first place come Monday. They can do it, and they're good enough, and they're good enough to overcome him. It's just that shouldn't be the storyline here in this ultimate year after the five-year build, is that you're trying to overcome and withstand your manager. That ain't right.
Yeah, these things have popped up, and again, there's 133 games left, so it's bound to pop up again. I'm hoping for like a 10-day reprieve. I mean, is that asking so much? Can I put my my second guessing, my horror and aghast react on the IL for 10 days.
The 10 days is nice, not 15 anymore.
That's what I'm saying. Just 10 days, just a quick break. I'll be fine. I'll be more than happy to second guess anything and get back into a panic. But I would like to kind of not quite be on the ledge. I would like to just kind of get into the window jam and kind of hang out there and not have to deal with this. But I said it to David yesterday during one of the breaks. We got to get a hold of Window Nation and get one of these windows so that it opens, because I may have to jump out it if this goes on.
Does Tony have any grandchildren that might be graduating college this weekend? Could he have an excused absence? Could he actually possibly not be making the trip to Kansas City to attend a grandson or a granddaughter's college graduation? Not his own kids, but they're his grandkids. Yes, they could be in first place, but we've had a big shift. Like, when we started this week, we were all looking forward to, we didn't see this fumble by La Russa coming, we were all talking about the big weekend series in Kansas City, first place on the line against the Royals and the White Sox, but then, whoops, the Royals dropped four in a row to the Indians, right? So now all of a sudden, when you open up your Sun Times or your Tribune this morning, look who's on top in the division. It's the Cleveland Indians, and the Indians play the Reds. So a little interleague rivalry weekend in the state of Ohio this weekend. So best case scenario, I'm hoping that the White Sox could be tied for first place with Cleveland. I do not expect them to have sole possession of it when we get back.
You're not a Reds fan? Is that what you're saying?
Not a Reds fan, no. Yeah. I'm kind of pulling for the Tribe, I got to be honest, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those are tough questions to answer, because it's like, what do I say to that?
Our guy Gordon Wittenmeyer has proposed a Chris Bryant trade to the White Sox. Are you on board, and what would it cost? Would the Sox make the deal with a gulp Scott Boras client? Would the Cubs be willing to help the Sox?
I got to tell you, I know a lot of people want to get this deal together, and I've heard tons of people mention it. Oh, you know, hey, you got a great guy on the north side. He could easily come over. I'm not convinced that would work in any way. I'm really not. And it's nothing to do with Chris Bryant. Part of it is the Boras client problem you have with the White Sox, and you have a problem with that for whatever reason. Part of it is that he's got an expiring contract, and you know that you're never going to be able to sign him to a long-term deal, in part because of the agent. I would love to see Chris Bryant move to the South Side and help that team out, and I think he could do so. But I just think it's just not a good fit in terms of the amount of money the White Sox want to spend, the amount of prospects the Cubs would expect. I think Gordon said Yoelqui Cespedes would be the starting point. Done. Go ahead. I mean, we haven't even seen him. I think he's still having visa problems. We haven't even seen him.
He's
in
not
Birmingham.
In the country. Yeah.
I'm just saying. So, I mean, if you want that and some backup pitcher, great. But I think that the cost would be a heck of a lot more than that for a guy that you know in your heart you're never going to be able to sign. And does he ensure you a World Series? You know, if it's a World Series, then we can have a conversation. But I just don't see all of that coming together, and I'm missing the magic of that deal when I really sit down and start figuring it out.
Yeah, you know, first of all, from the Cubs' perspective, I'm still fighting the eventual probable reality of Bryant being traded.
That's horrible.
I hate it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I do too.
And I hate it now, a month in, way more after watching him, because his changes, his adjustments are real and they are spectacular. But the from the White Sox perspective, the Cubs are, if they're going to deal that and deal somebody, they want kids. They want a big pile of kids. Mm-hmm. And Rick Hahn has flat out said he's not going to mortgage the future for this year. And guess what? That's one of the only places he's really got some control at this moment. And I think he's going to hold on to that. And if I were him, I would too. I would not deal a treasure trove of prospects for a rental, as you say. Like, if you're going to make a deal, make it for somebody who might stick around, or you've got a couple years to play with in that way.
Of course, I'm on board with this, as long as it's with somebody from the active current roster. You know, you can keep your scratch-off tickets. This is different. This is not Yu Darvish. We've talked about this. This is not Yu Darvish. There's not a $60 million salary attached to this. And, you know, the idea that Rick Hahn, has he not been paying attention what's going on up the street at Wrigley Field? The idea that, well, we can wait. You can't wait in baseball. I don't think waiting's an option. The Cubs waited and waited and waited and then got there, and now we're waiting and waiting and waiting. The windows open and close very quickly. So if this team is really running away with things, and you still don't have your supposed to be starting center fielder and your starting left fielder, and you want to win a World Series, you go get Chris Bryant. But it's going to cost you. I've even lowered my price just a little bit. But it starts with Vaughn. It starts there. And if that's, you know, if you're watching us on Twitch, Spiegel shaking his head.
I think it's a non-starter to break up the Southside roster.
Well, I'm just saying
the major league
roster.
They're
not doing that, Dustin. And Vaughn's when you
not
trade
win
a guy,
the World Series this year.
When you trade a guy, you're trading
for prospects.
He's
not going to win the World Series this year, and Chris Bryant would.
There's something in between the Darvish package you got from the Padres and taking things off the major league roster, and it's Jared Kelly, and it's Yoki Cespedes,
right.
And it is a young arm from the bullpen or something, but it's like, there's something in between the two examples you're talking about.
Well, I need more to that. I need to know more about the in-between.
You just want to win the deal, so you're demanding.
Well, I think it's the Cubs' turn to win a deal with the White.
See,
right?
That's all it is.
There's a back and forth on this, right?
I mean, that's all it is.
You're tired of Benetti saying thanks, Cubs.
The last time they made a trade, the last time they made a trade, it clearly went the White Sox way. So now it's the Cubs' turn. At least let it be
That's all he really. That's all it is.
Now I get it.
He's not trying to make a deal. He's trying to
decoding Dustin.
He's trying to get back at him.
That's a real question.
What did you make of Bears coach Matt Nagy telling Colin Cowherd of FS1 that his job status and Ryan Pace's job status will play no part in when quarterback Justin Fields plays next season?
The worst thing we can do is put him in when he's not ready and ruin him, and which ruins the Bears.
Nagy went on to say, quote, "We want to make sure we do this so he has a very successful entry into the league," unquote. Do you take that as confirmation Nagy and Pace will be here in 2022?
I think they know that they don't have to rush, and I think that's good. I'm good with that. I'd like them to make this decision without the urgency of we better win to save our jobs. So I'm hopeful that they feel like they're going to be here for 2022. It's a different situation than I thought I'd be in before the draft, that's for sure. But here we are. And so I guess I've been thinking that there's a couple years there. I keep also hoping that no matter what Matt Nagy says, that he will have an open mind and that Justin Fields might show up and know things to the extent that he gets comfortable and learn things to the extent that he gets more comfortable and then show it unmistakably during training camp and preseason games and force their hand. And as long as he has an open mind to that, I am totally cool with this, especially public way of talking about it and saying it.
You know, I've felt all along when they had that news conference to tell at the end of the year to tell you that they were all on the same page and they believe they've done everything right with the quarterback and the winning part of it. When they said that, I felt, wow, that, you know, they really, these guys are here for a while and they really do. And Ted talked about the first 3 years and the last 3 years and what they're doing. And then to give them the power to dip into next year's draft, whether it was in this, Russell Wilson idea or what they actually did on draft day to move up. And I love the move up and I love that they got Justin Fields. And I think it does change kind of the narrative about what we're expecting from the Chicago Bears. But remember, Ryan Pace wouldn't tell you what length of contract he had. And that was very interesting to me because, again, we talked to Russ Tucker yesterday, and every player, their information is out there. You can find it online. It's not hard to figure out who's making what and to follow the money and as to who's contributing what. But you don't know that about even the length of contract with the general manager. And we know the coach is under contract. I got a feeling that they let's put it this way. They drafted like a consensus of fellas, a collaborative that knew it, there was no trouble and there was no panic and there was no need to win in the right now. Because that draft, and it's a good one, isn't about winning now. And if you, I think, you know, 528 did some sort of a breakdown on draft, winning draft classes versus winning in the season. And as is often the case, he who wins the offseason never wins in season. Mm. That's just one of the rules of the NFL. And when you follow free agency, remember that. But I think these guys are here for a while. I think they know it. And I think when Matt Nagy speaks confidently about, it's not about Matt Nagy, it's not about Ryan Pace, it's about Justin Fields, it's about the future of the Bears, they know they're about the future of the Bears. And so it's not about anybody else.
Well, I'll start with this. I do believe there's no question that at this time next year when we're doing the same segment potentially, Matt Nagy will be the coach of the Chicago Bears. That I have extreme faith in. That's like a 1-5. That's like a 1-5 shot. Like, yeah, you know, I got to bet $5 to get a dollar back. That's the case. But I do think that Ryan Pace could be in trouble if a couple of things happen. His starting offensive tackle that he has now moved up and selected in the second round, that presumably as of right now is written in pencil as the starter at left tackle for this team, has to perform. He cannot be a revolving door. He cannot be a penalty machine. And the other area that I am still upset stomach about, which on probably a week ago, you know, the number one position the Bears cannot ignore in this year's NFL draft is, Dustin, cornerback.
Yep.
And they basically ignored cornerback. And I think that's a glaring hole. Now, there will be cuts. There are guys whose fifth-year options haven't been picked up. But as we also know, the Bears' salary cap situation isn't very good. And I'm just very worried about cornerback. So if the Bears are losing games 32-28 because their corners are getting fried, that's going to fall on Ryan Pace. And it's also going to be, you know, Dustin, try to blame the brand new young defensive coordinator who Ryan Pace elevated up as well, right?
So Sean Desai.
These are things that could bite Ryan in the backside and make him not be here.
It was interesting because one of the things Nagy said to Colin Cowherd was, that decision, meaning the decision to start the quarterback, basically that's in season. That's my decision. Mm. That decision is made by me. I forget the way he termed it, but that's a roster decision that he makes that the general manager is not going to be making. Ryan Pace has a lot more power here. It doesn't have power during the season. Matt Nagy has a lot more power here than people realize, which is what you're kind of saying, Dustin. This is his pick at quarterback. We heard that from Ryan Pace. This is the guy he wanted, and he's going to control when the guy plays. So that would seemingly indicate that he's going to be here for a long time. But I don't think you make those moves unless you're confident that you're going to be around. Because of exactly what you said, Dustin, the very fact you ignore the corner position indicates you think you're going to get another bite at the apple next year in the second round.
What kind of question is that?
Is the fractured relationship between Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers heading to divorce, in your opinion? If Rodgers does come back, are the Packers still a Super Bowl contender?
Yeah, that's a really interesting part of it. It looks like this has fallen apart. It looks like, you know, they've gone beyond any kind of marriage counseling here. That think about it. You know, Aaron Rodgers is estranged from his entire family. Mm. And he's a guy that is used to cutting people off. And he is used to moving on in his life. And his life is changing. He's in change mode. People get into change mode. He's got a new love in his life. He's getting married. He probably wants to get out of Green Bay and live in a different area of the country. He's also, how old is he, 37, 38 years old?
Yep.
And he's been there for 16 years. That is a lot of time of your life to be in one spot. And I don't know that it warms his heart. He seems like he's got bigger aspiration. And he wants to win. And I'm sure a guy like Aaron Rodgers feels wherever he goes, you're going to win because he's going to win. But I would be careful about choosing the team if I were him. Even if he comes back, how much does the damaged relationships, and I don't, you know, I think we talk about consensus and control and collaboration. We throw these words around. I think the Packers might have the least amount of consensus and collaboration. I think the coach is working for the general manager. I don't think it's the other way around. I think in Chicago, we talk about the collaboration. That just means Matt Nagy has power. I think on the South side, there's no collaboration, right? Rick Hahn, the general manager, might not have power. Seems like there was no consensus building in bringing in Tony La Russa. This is a totally different style of organization, and I think the same thing is going on in Green Bay, and it's a bad thing for the player. Now, I don't know if this affects relationships within the locker room. Usually that's where the schism is. I don't know how the players feel, but I do think that this is a big enough kind of hole in this team to affect whether or not they could actually win a Super Bowl.
I think Rodgers is the rare quarterback who at this point in his life, this point in his career, and because a lot of the context you just gave, Mully, he is going to be willing to take this as far as he needs to take it to make it untenable for them to keep him. Like, if the game of chicken ends up being, I'll sit out a year, he's got enough money and enough interests and enough will and comfort with estrangement to go ahead and do that for a year. And at that point, if you're the Packers, you're going to end up having to stand there and say, all right, am I just going to mortgage a year of my franchise because I've got this cap hit for a guy who's not even here? Or am I going to go ahead and trade him so at least I get something in the process, some players and some picks while I rebuild? And if that ends up being the hand that gets forced, I think he gets his wish and he gets his way out.
You know what the problem with that, and I'm not arguing with you, I think the problem with that is when you force a trade, sometimes you don't win the trade. Sometimes the other team is willing to give up so much. Like he, in my opinion, he needs to win the deal if he's leaving Green Bay because he's going to need players around him. Mm. He's going to need a team that doesn't lose. I'm talking about really more current players than future draft picks because he's in a shorter time span. But that's the difference. You know, everyone talks about Tom Brady. Brady was a free agent.
And he just went to a team that was ready and full and stocked.
Yeah, and then added, yeah.
Well, I think Rodgers is going to have the hubris to think that he can win wherever he goes. And I think he's going to have the narcissism, if you will, and to believe that it's important enough that he gets out and can start again. So I'm shocked that we're here. I do believe he's played his last down as a Green Bay Packer, and I think he's going to hold on to it. He's that guy who's going to hold on to it that strong. And, man, I look forward to the Packers not having a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback.
Well, I also hope and dream and pray that he no longer is the quarterback of that team north of the Cheddar Curtain. That is a wish and a prayer and a dream. But my biggest, what does he want? If you believe the report that he was offered the highest salary for a quarterback in the NFL. What else does he want?
Again, out.
Devontae Adams.
That's the answer. That's a big clue just, that what he wants is out.
Just out. Right. So, I think, Matt, you're right. I think if you're the Packers, you need to trade him so you get stuff. You're going to get multiple first-round picks. Now, you would assume that whatever team he goes to, they're going to be pretty good the first couple of years he's on that team. So those will be low picks. But you're also now going to have a boatload of cash to operate with in the future. So, I mean, listen, the money is green, and the money goes a longer way up in Green Bay than it does in other places. So if you're making NFL money in Green Bay, you're living large in Green Bay.
I think $100 million you can do okay in L.A. too.
Yeah, probably, but you know better than I. It doesn't go as far. Not that we know what $100 million spends like, but you know what it's like to have to be paid and live in L.A. and what that does or doesn't get you. You had the guts to go to L.A. I did not have the guts to go to L.A. So I went. I produced Man Cow for a while, and you went to L.A. But now we're all back here at the Score.
I came
so
crawling
all,
back.
So it's all good.
L.A. is your lady, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
It's not about money. That's the real problem.
He's
here.
The rare guy where it's just that's not going to be a factor.
If I were the Packers, I would trade him and not let him retire, because all retirement does is make you kind of look like we forced Aaron's hand and he sits out. Now he has to pay us back the money. The money's not the issue. He'll pay him back the money. He's got other places he can make more money. But you're missing out then on restocking your organization if you let him walk out that door for nothing.
Boy, there's a part of me that would just love to see Jordan Love start a quarterback and just see what that looks like. And like all the, you know, the big wigs with the Packers sitting there like, I'm gonna.
This, wait a minute, we okayed this? We're all right with this?
Exactly.
We let this happen?
That's beautiful. All right, that's the 5 and 5. 312-644-6767. What do you think? We'll get your opinion. Would you trade Carlos Rodon? Are you willing to make that move, or is that nonsensical to you? How do you feel about the Sox getting the first place? Would you trade Chris Bryant to the White Sox, Cubs fans? I mean, my God, Dustin, only if you win it. That's the rule. And what do you think about the collaboration and who's in charge and who's going to be back and how that's going to work out? And any chance that Rodgers returns? And if he does, are they any good? Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.